Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Why don't we start with LeBron James? Now, LeBron had his 12th triple-double of the season Wednesday night. I have said it before. I need to say it again right now in order to set this up. The fact that LeBron James is still playing at this level in his 17th NBA season, to me, is utterly ridiculous. The fact that he's making it seem so normal is completely abnormal. And the fact that he makes it look so easy that people take it for granted makes it even more insane. Here's some numbers quickly. He has played 48,000 minutes in the regular season. Add to that another 10,000 in the playoffs, and that's the equivalent of more than three more regular seasons. All of that, with all that mileage, at this age, and he's still doing things like this.
It was right in front of the Laker bench, and they were absorbing it. Oh, LeBron! One hand with authority, it forces.
All that mileage, and not only is he still doing things like that, he's still doing things like this, the Kobe dunk.
Wide open, had to kick it out, picked off. Here's Bradley ahead of the field, goes to James, and LeBron with the reverse.
The tribute to the Mamba. So exactly how does this guy do it? Obviously, he takes amazing care of his body. Body is temple. His moneymaker. Strength, speed, cardio, mobility, flexibility, pliability. He does it all. If you've seen this guy getting a workout in on those plastic bubbles, you know he's focused on every single detail. And a lot of it's got to be about the way he fuels himself, right? A lot of this, as body as fuel, has to be about the type of fuel that he puts in that body. Am I right? I am not right. Not according to Tristan Thompson, because Joe Vardon and Jason Lloyd have got a piece up right now where they ask teammates, rivals, friends, and more about LeBron. And the stories are absolutely amazing. You've got one from Kyle Korver, who is a cardio legend, talking about how he and LeBron were in a team relay challenge on the VersaClimber. When they finished, Korver was on the ground. He was on the ground, Alvin, gasping for air. And LeBron takes off down the court, and he throws down a windmill dunk. An amazing story, right? David Griffin talks about how LeBron knew the Raptors playbook so well, he would tell the Raptors players where they needed to line up on their own plays. There's a story about Brandon Ingram talking about a Lakers pickup game in training camp where they were playing to 20 and LeBron scored all 20 for his team. So when you do all of that, all the time and more, you have to be using some clean burning fuel, right? You are what you eat. You are how you fuel. Not according to Tristan Thompson. Thompson said this about LeBron, quote, "He has the worst bleeping diet ever. Ask him what he eats for breakfast. He has like five French toast, drowns it in syrup with strawberries and bananas. Then he has like a four egg omelet. And then he goes and just bleeping dunks on somebody. It doesn't make sense." End of quote. It's one of the best things anybody has ever said about anybody else. That the guy has a four egg omelet and then he goes and just bleeping dunks on somebody. And no, that really doesn't make sense. It just doesn't.
It doesn't make any sense.
Thank you, Alvin. I was waiting on that. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
In fact, it makes worse than no sense. Like, it's not even possible. How can that guy play that many minutes when he's running on French toast, syrup, and strawberries, and four egg omelets? Forget all the MVPs, the championships, the gold medals, everything else LeBron has accomplished. All of that pales in comparison to the fact that he's allegedly doing all those things while all hopped up on essentially the IHOP diet. This guy completely shatters the notion that you are what you eat. Because according to Thompson, LeBron eats like Augustus Gloop.
Augustus, sweetheart, save some room for later.
And yet, I don't recall old Gus mastering the chase down block or windmill dunks before he fell into and drowned in that chocolate river. Fat ass. Not only does he ruin the idea that you are what you eat, but he wrecks the idea that You can't outwork a bad diet. Again, this is only one source. And maybe Thompson is just cracking on LeBron. Maybe he's getting everybody all worked up. Maybe he made it all up. Maybe he's lying. But from the sounds of it, LeBron does not just have a bad diet. LeBron has the worst diet. Does this dude just go to Golden Corral all the time? The guy allegedly has roughly 5% body fat. 5% body fat on what sounds like a 100% sugar diet. And the truth is, I could not be any more impressed than I am. Dwight Howard's candy addiction. Cannot believe LeBron's diet and the fact that it works. French toast, syrup, and strawberries all the time. How is this dude not in a permanent carb coma or on the verge of some sort of diabetic amputation? Hey, look, I love French toast, but if I even see it, if I even look at it, much less eat it, I'll gain 5 pounds, and then I'll need to nap it out for about 3 hours. What I'm definitely not going to do is go out and drop a triple dub on an NBA team or go sprint on a VersaClimber. Not only is that not clean burning fuel, that's burning. Dumping sugar into your gas tank, literally. And yet this guy somehow burns right through it. And according to Thompson, it does not stop at breakfast. Quote, he eats desserts with every meal. He'll come in with this one-week diet, vegan crap, but he literally eats like it doesn't make sense. He's really a specimen. He eats like bleep, end quote. My man's got desserts with every single meal. Desserts with every meal. That's like a six-year-old's greatest dream. It's not something you actually do, though. And yet, this guy is a professional athlete. Arguably the GOAT, and he's doing it. He's treating every meal like a trip to the Wonka Chocolate Factory. Or Ritt's office.
It's lit.
Garrett Ritt has the worst diet I've ever heard of. Or at least he did, until I heard of LeBron's. You're no longer the man, Ritt. How does this guy not look like Stanley Roberts? Or John Hot Plate Williams? Or Ritt? It's impossible. And I love Thompson saying that LeBron tried that, quote, vegan crap. And then just went back to eating like bleep and that it still works. So, if you were to see something like that and you were his teammate, it would be natural to assume, I'm going to try and eat like him and then I can be like him. Thompson tried that. It did not go well. He said, quote, I remember one year I tried to eat like he ate and it just didn't work out. I started gaining weight and said, bleep this. I mean, it works for him. He loves sweets. He loves sweets. He eats desserts and French toast. It's crazy how his body just burns it. End quote. So, desserts and French toast. A guy who allegedly spends $1 million a year on development and maintenance of his body, yet he's fueling it with dessert and French toast. Gotta be kidding me. Hey, but don't get it twisted. I'm not cracking him. I'm jealous of him. Who doesn't love sweets? Who doesn't want desserts and French toast all the time? Tom Brady is cutting out tomatoes and whipping up avocado ice cream while LeBron is pounding French toast with syrup and strawberries and dunking over everybody in the league. So of all the things I've heard about LeBron, that is the most impressive thing ever. And I'm going to be really disappointed if I find out that he doesn't have like those six different multi-flavored syrup containers when it's time to fuel up like they do at IHOP. I mean, they got some weird crap there, don't they? Yeah, because I really want to put coconut syrup on my pancakes. You know, weird syrup. But like eight different types. He better have that. And he better be hitting that French toast with whipped cream, chocolate chips, hot fudge, and butterscotch, and vanilla ice cream, too. Now, if you want, you can call bullcrap on Tristan Thompson. But I'm going to tell you, you can believe what you want to believe, and I want to believe that it's all true. In fact, I do believe that it's all true. Why? Because it's awesome, and it makes me feel better about me. Because when I'm beating myself up and living in shame over what I put into my body, I still know on my very worst day that I'm doing better than LeBron, diet-wise. That coming from a guy who ate a half a sleeve of Girl Scout cookies last night. Man, I keep telling the fam, just support the cause, but don't buy the cookies, man. Just chip them off. If they're there, I'm going to eat them. But even then, I still do better than LeBron. On my worst day, I'm doing better than LeBron. Diet-wise, damn, everybody is, except Rit. Strive for greatness out here, Rit. Man, I hope that's true. In fact, I know it's true. You know how I know? I believe it to be true. It's Pancake Friday! French Toast Wednesday!
Hey, clones, the question of the day. What do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? I can tell you what we don't want. We don't want another bar or another sugary snack or another energy drink. No, instead we want beef. Pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. It's not shriveled. It's not dry. It's not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. What makes it so good? I'm going to say it's the company behind it. Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. And Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. It's quality smoked meat at its finest, and it goes wherever you go. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? He is Dennis Dodd. Dennis, it's good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, I am great. How are you?
Dennis, I'm perfect, and there's so much I want to cover with you. However, before we get to any of this, even more importantly, I understand that you were recently on vacation and you had an opportunity to dine at Javier's. Lay it out for me, Dennis. How'd that go?
Destination spot, obviously, was out in the OC. Went on Friday with the lovely Mrs. Dodd, who pulled a great one. We walk in about 5:30, Jim, on a Friday. You know how that looks at Javier's Crystal Cove. And it's an hour and a half wait for two.
Woo.
And they, you know, they tell you, okay, to find a spot at the bar, you can get in and eat there. Mrs. Dodd immediately spots two chairs at the bar, had a great experience, shrimp enchiladas, took a lap, looked for you, didn't see you, but it was great.
Hey, listen, if they told you an hour and a half wait, had you dropped my name, it would have been a 2.5 hour wait. Dude, I'm so glad that you guys did that. So the missus, she loved it. It lived up to all the hype.
Absolutely. Had the skinny margarita and I think lobster enchiladas. I'm trying to remember, but she absolutely loved it. It was great.
That's my go-to right there. Dennis Dodd joining us. So glad to hear it. All right. So now that we've addressed the biggest and most important news, let's get to Mel Tucker leaving Colorado for Michigan State. First off, if you were to go back a little bit, Dennis, what was your reaction when Mark D'Antonio stepped down?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was conflicted. I think there's more there than just what he called it, a tsunami of off-field issues every day coming across his desk. Obviously, he was going to wait to, at least till January 15th to pick up a $4.3 million retention bonus. And that's fine. He had earned it. He negotiated it. He earned it. But wasn't that tsunami of problems on his desk the next day on January 16th? There seemed to be some strategy here to him resigning the day before the second signing day, putting Michigan State in a box to the point where they had to try to retain whatever players they were going to sign left in that class, that entire class, obviously, because Mark D'Antonio recruited it, and then to find a new coach at this late date. And, it, you know, they threw whatever it was. I think I read the total for Mel Tucker, $18.8 million, including assistance and buyouts to get Mel Tucker, who's 5-7 in his first year as a head coach. So they were in desperate situation.
Dennis Dodd joining us. Listen, I understand why Tucker is going to jump after only one year. He doubled his salary. Everybody would do the same thing. So he's held in really high regard as an assistant under Jim Tressel, Nick Saban, and Kirby Smart, but he was only at Colorado for that one year. What is your sense as to how he would do or will do at Michigan State?
I think he'll do well. The issue I have with him is, and I think Mel Tucker was a great coach and a great guy, don't tweet that you're staying and then 4 days later take the money. You know, he leveraged, I guess we'd all do it, leveraged himself, leveraged Michigan State situation. But as late as Tuesday night was making the rounds in Denver and Boulder on radio shows saying he was staying. That's the problem I have. You know, best just to say nothing. and to put Colorado out there and tease them and then double your salary. I mean, there's a larger story here, I think, Jim, with the Pac-12. You know, Michigan State basically bought out Colorado. They bought out Mel Tucker. There are a few destination jobs in the Pac-12, you know, all echoing to a larger narrative that the Pac-12's, you know, ability to compete in big-time football.
All right, so Dennis, on that point, I mean, USC was dominating college football under Pete Carroll. Then you had Chip Kelly and Oregon. Then you had Stanford doing what they were doing. I understand things are all cyclical, and it's a matter of time, right, before the Pac-12 is back on top. Or is that not the case? Have other conferences started to pull away from the Pac-12 in a way that the Pac-12 is not going to be able to catch up?
The Big Ten and SEC are pulling away from everybody, Jim. It's not just the Pac-12. It's just that the Pac-12 right now is the lowest ranked of the Power Five conferences, and it's been that way for a while. Listen, you are what you do in the playoffs, and the Pac-12 has only made it 2 out of 6 years. They haven't made it in 3 years. There's, I don't know, an uncertainty at both UCLA and USC, both, you know, flagship programs historically in the Pac-12. Now things are looking north to Mario Cristobal. I just read a story just now that they're looking to wrap him up with another extension and another raise, which is smart because, again, I'll go back to it. Where are the destination jobs in the Pac-12? Maybe Washington, USC. After Willie Taggart left Oregon, I wouldn't say that's a destination job. So they're at a critical point right now.
Dennis Dodd, my guest. The thing is, Dennis, it's not just a Pac-12 versus a Big Ten thing. As you wrote, Tucker was making $2.4 million in Colorado, which is a lot of money, until you realize that Alabama was spending $2.6 million on recruiting alone. How on earth is Colorado or just about any other school supposed to compete with that?
Well, you don't. Look, there have only been 11 teams that have participated in the playoff, and we all know who they are, to the point that LSU was the new team, the 11th team. You know, it's the same old teams at the top. So even within the Big Ten and the SEC, don't look at the conferences. Just look at the teams that put forth the resources and have the best coaches that can compete for it. That list really is down to 5 or 6 in any given year because they are outspending each other. And then you get to the point where, okay, there's all this money floating around. Why can't the players get a little bit in this name, image, and likeness thing to the point that it's about to reach the president's desk, Jim. I wrote that last week.
We're talking to Dennis Dodd. All right, so on that point, you've got that connection to the issue of compensating athletes for their name, their image, their likeness rights. When people in the NCAA complain that allowing that compensation would make for an uneven playing field, what's your reaction? I mean, how even is the playing field right now?
Yeah, it's real simple for me. So if players are allowed to earn money off endorsements and commercials, autographs, whatnot, whatever, that doesn't change the simple math. Alabama is going to get the best players, and the likes of the University of Toledo are not. You know, I keep hearing about this competitive imbalance. We just went over that. It's real, and it's big, and it's growing. Whether Tua Tagovailoa at Alabama gets a $100,000 endorsement contract at Alabama isn't going to matter at all. And they talk about guardrails in recruiting. Here's the biggest guardrail. In recruiting, you can only sign 25 of these guys. And the same teams are still going to be good. I looked Mark Emmert in the eye in September on a trip to D.C. where he was speaking. And I just said, how much money can these kids earn or get over and above what they get now, you know, the scholarship, whatever, that it turns off the average fan? And we were distracted. He didn't answer, but I answered the question for him. I said, I think that's a really huge number, because you could put a Pee Wee football team from Michigan and Ohio State out there and it would still sell out the Shoe.
No doubt. And I'm guessing he really was not that distracted. He probably didn't want to answer the question. Dennis, one last thought. What about Colorado? There's been talk about Eric Bieniemy being linked to Colorado. That makes sense given that he played there. He's got a relationship with the AD, Rick George, there. I understand why Colorado would want him, but given the fact that Kansas City just won the Super Bowl, they're the favorite in the next Super Bowl, and that Bieniemy would be expected to get an NFL head coaching job next year, could you see him leaving for Colorado?
I don't. I'm here on the ground in Kansas City, and I immediately thought of him when the job came open. But Eric Bieniemy is a heartbeat away from an NFL head coaching job. He's interviewed at multiple NFL teams the last few years. He's highly respected. You know, he does everything on that team on offense except call the plays, and Andy does that. And frankly, the NFL with the Rooney Rule, it may not seem like it now, for the enemy has a better minority hiring record than college athletics. Now, he would be great at Colorado, but I think his career path is headed towards the NFL. I think he'll be a head coach by next year in the NFL.
He is a national college football writer for CBSSports.com. He goes to Javier's. He is a good friend of the program. He's Dennis Dodd. Dennis, great to have you. Thank you so much.
Jim, thanks so much.
Adam Hawk is the EP of the program, radio term for executive producer. All right, so Adam, you love golf. You love Tiger. You love Riviera. You love embarrassing yourself, your family, and me and my brand. You've been there in years past. I have to ask, exactly what is your plan for this weekend?
Totally different plan this weekend. The last couple of years, I've went with my friends, and it's very easy to get around and have some fun,
what
drink
friends?
Some beers.
You have friends?
I actually do. I've got a lot of friends.
How many?
I don't know.
Name one.
Shane Weprick, Ben Farber, Ryan Rozak. These
Whatever.
Are real people.
What a bunch of dopes. They're friends with you, dude. What do they get out of it?
A great, loyal guy who takes them to great events like Riviera.
Huh.
But this year, I will not be going with them. I'll be going with my family, and that is...
Bros before fam.
Yeah.
What about that?
It's fam this year. It's Valentine's Day weekend. I cannot make the trip without bringing my family because I've been going
on... Do you know what's worse than blowing off your family on Valentine's Day for that tournament? Is bringing your family to Valentine's Day for that tournament.
Yeah, none of them want to go.
They'd probably respect it more if you left them at home and let them do their own thing.
Probably, but I've gone on too many weekend outings lately without my family. Miami, New York, a couple of golf trips to Indian
Wells.
Miami
was not a weekend outing. That was work.
Okay, fair enough. But I'm going to these fun destinations without my family, and I'm bringing back these great memories and these pictures. And
Did I look like I was having fun in Miami?
You played through. It was very nice, very respectable.
All right, so you've got a wife, you've got a 3-year-old, you've got a 1-year-old. Do any of them like golf?
Well, my 3-year-old pretends to make me happy. My 1-year-old has no idea where he is or what he's doing. And my wife hates golf. And
how does she feel about the cat?
She does not like Tiger Woods one bit.
But you're going to take her on Valentine's Day weekend to Riv?
Absolutely, because I need to go to Riv. I can't go on Thursday and Friday. I work here. I'm not going to go.
I've never heard a guy say I as many times as you, Hawk. Happy wife, happy life. Have you not heard that?
I have. And that's why we're going out tonight. And then tomorrow we will be going to Riviera, which is the least family-friendly thing you could possibly do. A golf tournament.
Wait. Are you bringing the kids
to the
event?
Oh, yeah.
You are.
And I've been warned by many people, you bringing a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old to a golf tournament is the stupidest thing in the world. Because
I can't even trust you to keep your mouth shut in an event. You're going to bring... What's going to happen when the babies, plural, start screaming in your hero's backswing?
It's going to be horrible.
What's your plan for that?
I don't have a plan. I honestly don't.
Yes, you do. You're going to leave the kids at home. That's the plan.
I can't. The ball is rolling down the hill. The plan is in motion. So, yeah, we're
Do they
we're
have
going.
Grandparents?
They do. The grandparents are watching them tonight. We don't want to make them watch them two nights in a row, so we'll be taking
it
them
to Sounds
like
the worst plan ever, dude.
A golf tournament live is all about two things, walking and being quiet. Two things kids don't want to do, and I'm bringing my kids.
Well, I was going to say, so you know this, so why are you bringing your kids? Because we, quote, we can't get a babysitter?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going. I'm bringing them. We're going. And I'm using my child, my 3-year-old, as a prop to get a high five from Tiger because Tiger's been known to give high fives to kids. He rarely gives them out, but he gives them out to the youth. So I'm going to put my 3-year-old daughter on my shoulders, and I've already taught her to say, Tiger, Tiger. So she's going to do that as he walks by, and hopefully we get a high five.
You should teach her to say things like, Tiger, Perkins. You should, like, what happens if you taught her, who are you going to high five? If he doesn't make the cut.
Well, that's another thing. I'm closely monitoring the leaderboard right now because he got on the bogey train yesterday on the back nine and continued it this morning on the front. He's made the turn at...
You should teach her to say, Tiger, cheapskate.
My wife will probably teach her all that. My wife really disdains the guy because of his past.
A lot of wives
women.
Do. I was going to say, yeah. There are a lot of wives that do.
She's very disgusted with my obsession with the guy. Doesn't think he's a good role model.
So for Valentine's Day... You're going to bring the woman you love to an event and make her watch somebody she hates.
That is
like,
correct.
What kind of play is that, Hawk? That's like the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I got to go. And what am I going to do?
See, that's the thing, Hawk. You don't have to go. right? You're married. Happy wife, happy life. Valentine's Day. You've got a couple of kids. This is the whole point. You do not have to go.
Tiger Woods makes one appearance in Los Angeles a year. Gotta go.
Tiger Woods makes one appearance in Los Angeles a year. I will pick him over my family.
Well, I'm picking both.
Do you like being married?
Love it.
Do you like having a family?
Absolutely.
Stay your ass home. Damn, Hawk. Do I got to do everything for you?
I'm going to roll the dice and let you know how it goes.
All right. So pick a winner right now so I can go the other way and finally cash a ticket. Who you like?
I like Jon Rahm a lot. Rombo is so poised to have a big year. He's been on the cusp of being a top five player for a long time. This isn't only Rombo's week. I think this is the year Rombo gets a major. I love Jon Rahm's game. He's clearly not intimidated by anybody else out there. Great guy, great jungle guest. I like Jon Rahm a lot this week.
Stop talking. All right, thank you very much, Adam. Hey, Flight Deck, do you have a microphone back there in the back row? Then move on up here. Let's do a little musical chairs. Bring it up here. Adam Hawk, it's Friday, so we're having a little bit of fun. You're getting to meet each member of the XR4TI. That was Adam Hawk.
The way he flies.
I don't play favorites. Here's my favorite member of the XR4TI, James Kelly. He works one day a week. Well, he comes in one day a week. So, dude, you're the guy who's going to get down, and you're looking to make some money. He just said, take Jon Rahm. What's your reaction to that?
5 minutes before you had him on, I hit Jon Rahm.
And so how do you feel about that right now?
I'm trying to get my money back right now.
Dude, you know, once you get down, you can't get your money back.
Yeah, that's what they say, too. So.
No, that's true.
That bet is lost.
You hit anybody else? You got any other big picks for the weekend? You're going to go MMA? Are you going Daytona?
No MMA this weekend.
NBA?
Dude, NBA until Sunday. I might have to jump on the, dunk contest or three-point contest or the XFL.
Who are you taking on the dunk contest?
I have to look at that, actually.
Flight Deck's great. Flight Deck says, I may have to jump on the dunk contest, the three-point shooting contest, or the XFL. Do you know anything about the XFL and the matchups?
I studied a little bit last week.
You sound much better, man. Thanks for finding a microphone and turning it on.
The DC Defenders, I think, on my team. I got to check that out, though.
Did you say you started studying the XFL last week?
Early Saturday morning last week, I had nothing, so I had to jump in. About four games, I started looking into it.
Because you were jonesing so hard.
I was jonesing so hard.
You weren't doing it for the job. You weren't studying up on that for the job. You just needed action so badly that you started to bone up on the XFL.
Yes, and we had a lot more options last week than we had this week. But
Did you get down? Did you bet the XFL?
Yes, on DC. I hit it. I won. Yeah.
That's why you're the flight deck, dude. Good job. All right, man. Let me know.
Cardale Jones.
Adam Carolla is my guest. Adam, it's so good to have you on. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Dude, before we get into the documentary, let me rephrase that question. Overall, Adam, how is life? What's on your mind these days? What are you thinking about?
You know, it's so much is coming at everyone so fast these days. You know, it's funny. We thought that in the 50s, if we made a washing machine dryer, then the housewife would have more time to relax and read a magazine. And instead, all it did is free her up to do more work. And I feel that way with the computer and with the phone. It's like, I just feel like I'm working every weekend. I'm like in contact with everybody all the time. I'm getting like text messages. So I need to go just jump in a frozen lake.
Dude, I'm so glad that I rephrased that question. I'm so glad that you answered it that way, because one of your mantras is, if it doesn't make you money or it doesn't make you happy, don't do it. So does that pretty much guide everything you do at this point in your life?
I try to keep the, you know, Twitter arguments and things like that to a minimum, because it feels like it's just a waste of my time. Like, think about how fast and loose we all are with our time. You know, think about the time you spend just needlessly trying to settle some stranger's hash online that's probably a Russian bot anyway, you know. Look, I've been cranking out documentaries for the last 5 years, and books and everything else, and I just couldn't do it if I was binge watching Homeland
I couldn't do it.
It seems to me also, if you get so involved in like Twitter beefs, it can't make you happy, and it probably can't make you money. I mean, maybe you can monetize that. But to your point, if you do, you better do things that make you happy and make you money, and beefing on Twitter probably isn't one of those things. Now, however, you did find time to come up with a beverage company. Speaking of the beverages, how did Corolla Drinks first come to be, and what is your go-to drink?
I invented something called Mangria, which is like high-octane sangria, just one night by dumping vodka into red wine. The long story makes me sound like an alcoholic, so I'll spare you the details. But at a certain point, I just realized, like, I'm doing a podcast, and I'm selling books and doing live dates and all that kind of stuff, but I like drinking. I like having a hit once in a while, and why not make something? So I have everything. You can go to CorollaDrinks.com if anyone wants to get in on the wines or the Mangria or any of that stuff.
100%. Adam Carolla joining us. Now, it's no secret, you are an enormous car guy. Before we get into the documentary, how did you first get into cars, and when you were growing up, what was your dream car?
My dream car was not to have to drive a pickup truck, which I had to drive for 13 years when I was swinging a hammer for a living. And I didn't really get into cars. It just was, you know. I always use this example, but I think it's pretty fitting. If you ever ask Tommy Lee, and I did just recently speak to Tommy Lee, or you ever talk to any professional drummer, any rock and roll drummer, you go, how did you get into drumming? And they go, when I was five, I was in the kitchen banging on pots and pans.
Sure.
And that's the way I feel about mechanical stuff. That's the way I feel about cars. That's the way I feel about building. That's the way I feel about anything mechanical. That's always what I've been about. And I really got into show business so I could feed that habit.
Adam Carolla is my guest. Adam, we can all talk about our first car. Now, I don't want to talk about my first car, but I'd rather mention to you my first new car. I was the proud owner back in the day of a Mercor XR4 Ti. When you rank the great feats of engineering, and they did make that car for 2 years, when you rank the feats of engineering, the great feats, and truly special automobiles that have been created over the decades, where would you rank my XR4 Ti Mercor, a Ford engineered in Germany?
I'd have to put it somewhere between the AMC Matador and the Daihatsu Charade.
Seriously, man, the Matador might be the ugliest automobile ever manufactured. Am I right?
Well, the Mercure had that, like, triple spoiler splitter on
yes.
the back window, right?
I knew you would know that. Yes, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, you know, it's funny. That car was sort of a... or sort of came after the Capri. I mean, the Ford Mercury Capri. It was like Ford engine, kind of Euro kind of styling. They used to call it the sexy European.
You nailed it. That's exactly what that was, and it drove like crap. It was terrible, but I'm glad. I'm glad you knew that. Now, in the documentary, well, given your background with cars, it would make sense that you would produce and co-direct a documentary about Willie T. Ribbs. For those who do not know, who is Willie?
He's the first black driver to drive at Indy, if you want just a fortune cookie size description of him. He's a black man who was a gifted driver. He didn't drive in the 30s or the 40s. He drove in the semi-modern era. He drove in the 70s and the 80s and early 90s. He went to England. He won the Formula Ford championship over there. He came back as a 19-year-old. That's the kind of thing that if you go to England and you win the Formula Ford championship, then you come back and there's someone waiting for you at the airport to get you onto their Formula Atlantic team. And then you'd go from like Formula Atlantic into Indy or F1. When he got back, nobody wanted anything to do with him. And then at some point, he got called to go to Talladega to race in a stock car race. But it was really just the promoter, Humpy Wheeler, which is a great name. Just knowing he's black knowing that bringing him there to the South is going to stir things up, ended up getting death threats, have to come back to California. It's just an unlikely story. At some point gets hooked up. Bill Cosby sponsors him for his first ride at Indy. Don King is his manager. Paul Newman gets him into his first Trans Am, professional Trans Am ride. I mean, it's just a crazy tale of a black man in an all-white sport, essentially fighting against the powers, and then but also triumphing as well.
Adam Carolla is joining us. All right, so when you lay it out like that, when you're breaking barriers in racing, Adam, it's not just a game. You're flying around a track. I mean, it's really dangerous. You could get hurt badly. You could die at any moment. How much danger was he facing, and what's it say about Willie that he just kept on doing his thing?
Well, he was facing a lot of danger probably the first time he went to Indy, because if you go to Indy, the speeds are well over 200 miles an hour. People die there all the time, and if the car's not set up right, you'll hit the wall. And you will die. So Indy was a very dangerous place for him to go. His first time out with a team that didn't particularly seem to want him there. So that was a very dangerous situation for him. He's just one of those guys. He's built like all race car drivers are. They get in a horrible accident. They soak their cast off, and they're driving the next day.
Right. Adam Carolla, my guest. I mean, this guy, he's fierce. He's got this intensity about him and this incredible strength. He's a pioneer in so many ways, including being the first African-American driver at Indy. Why do you think, Adam, that more people do not know about him and his story?
Yeah, racing is one of those things, I don't know, maybe it's like tennis, where there's a handful of people at the top you've heard of, and then there's a bunch of next tier guys, and they're not household names. You know, it's not like football and basketball and baseball. I don't know. And also there's famous families. You know, there's the Andretti's, there's the Unsers. You know, it's like these are family names that from generation to generation keep racing. So you do know the Unsers, you do know the Andretti's. I just think most people don't take a deep dive into racing. I'm into racing, so I knew of him. I did not know his entire story, and I was obviously pleasantly surprised when I started making this doc to how that onion just kept peeling it, and there's just something. There's always another layer there. There's so much there. I mean, Caitlyn Jenner, when Caitlyn was Bruce Jenner's in this thing, raced back in the day with him. I mean, it's a crazy story.
Where did they race? Not Long Beach.
They raced in the Trans Am series in probably like 87. Bruce at the time was a partner, or the driving partner. If you do an endurance race, you need a couple of drivers, and he drove for the other team that Willie was racing against, and they even got into it in the parking lot and stuff, like got into a fight. Like, you have to watch the doc, but it is pretty nuts.
It's wild. So really quickly, so what's it mean to you to be involved in sharing his story with everybody else and putting it out there?
I'm proud of it. I'm proud to do it. I think when you make a documentary, the best thing you could hear is, God, I didn't know anything about that. Wow, what a story. And sometimes people feel bad that they should have known the story. They should have heard of the guy or whatever. So really the best part of it is just basically enlightening people, just having them go, I didn't know anything about this, and now I know everything about it. And always the best part is when someone tweets me, my wife's not a car person, she doesn't like racing, she watched a movie with me, she loved it. Like that's the best part.
That is the best part. He's the producer and co-director of the new Netflix documentary, Uppity, the Willie Two Ribs story. Adam, really quickly, since we're all connected right here in Southern California, you were in studio for Kevin and Bean's last show. I went into the Radio Hall of Fame with Kevin and Bean. It was such an awesome, awesome night in New York. But you were there for the final program when Bean walked away. What was that day like, given your connection to them and that show?
It was funny. I got an email from Jimmy Kimmel maybe the week before or the week of or something, and he said, like, I'm going into Kevin and Bean for the last show. You want to come with me? And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, I had a super busy day, and I live super far away, and I had to meet him there at the station at 7:30 in the morning or whatever. And I said, yeah, right. And so I met Jimmy there, and I didn't really know what to expect. And Jimmy and I thought we were going to do one break, maybe two breaks, but each time there'd be a commercial break, Jimmy'd go, why don't we hang out one more break? And I'd go, yeah, okay. And I'm so glad we did. And, you know, next thing you know, it's 9:30, 10 o'clock, like we're closing the show out. We've been there the whole day. There's tears. There's emotion. I was like, I had no idea. And that's just my wiring. I just have bad wiring. It's like, all right, I don't know what this is, but we'll do it. And next thing you know, everyone's hugging and crying. And it was an important, awesome experience. And I'm so glad, Jimmy, who's wired much differently than me, he's the guy who would send email and say, hey, it's important. You should be there. We should do this.
Yes.
And then after, I had a totally busy day planned, but after each break, Jimmy'd go, we should hang out for another break. So it was emotional.
Oh, no, that's heavy. It's really heavy. And you would have hated yourself had you not done that. And now looking back, it doesn't seem like it was that hard. It probably was an amazing thing to do. Once again, look for the new Netflix documentary, Uppity, the Willie T. Rib story. Adam Carolla is the producer. He is the co-director. Adam, I didn't mean to keep you that long, but thank you so much. That was great. That was a lot of fun. And the documentary is super.
I agree. Can I tell people if they want to get the
yes.
Blu-ray,
yes.
Go to Chassis, that's Chassy.com, all the racing movies there. And the Shelby doc is up on Netflix, the 24-Hour War, which is Ford v. Ferrari, that's up on Netflix. It's all there. We have tons of racing movies. So go to Chassis and check them out.
I'm glad you said that. I've got the Blu-ray version. It looks amazing. Adam Carolla, my guest. Adam, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim.
I see Cat Mate. Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? A tremendous Monday to you. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope your week's off to a good start. Nice to have you here. Lots to get done. Going to be a good day. Do you remember when pretty much nobody gave Dominic Reyes a chance? Because I do. It was just Friday. And then Saturday happened.
Yeah! Still!
Reyes fought an amazing fight. The former IT guy damn near beat the UFC champ.
My son at the beach house.
My new beach house.
Thinks the fix is in or something.
If ever there was a fight screaming for an immediate rematch, that's the one.
One of the judges had it 49-46. I might want to have a word with you.
He is Kevin Ioli.
I'll tell you what. I mean, the Texas Commission in general is just terrible, Jim. I don't say this lightly. Like, he did not know what he was watching.
Yes, sir!
I'm going to need at least one more week of the Battle Hawks and the Roughnecks before I give you my final answer. And back to the original scramble. The guys were separating their shoulders. Now that was good TV.
Email.
Can I sleep at Connor's house?
Connor.
Is teenage
Connor.
Code for can I smoke weed and party all night with girls? Because the kid did come back wearing the same suit that he was wearing 24 hours later.
And the Academy
Maybe
Award.
Maybe you stop with all the musical performances. If you've ever seen the Grammys, they don't stop that show every 10 minutes to start showing full-length movies. The IT guy got an issue with the monitor behind my back. Ready? Stop. No whammies. Stop. It worked. You're messing with me. I like it. I like it. Sharon, way to go. Alvy just hit me with Rich Ackerman, bomb of the hour. I'm like, right, Alvin, it's 11:20. D. Celestino's on talk back from New York. Alvin, we're in the first segment. He's going to stomp you. Tyler Hale is going to tear you up.
Oh, quit crying.
I respect the hell
quit
out of crying. You. I'm going to miss that guy in SoCal.
90-yard
touchdown.
Try humble,
good. Clean family smack. I love
that.
What's your beef?
This mom hollers at me.
You gotta call it both ways.
Lady, we're 45 seconds into the game.
I'm getting food. What do you want? She goes, I want nothing. When I get home, she eats all my freaking food.
Everybody with a fast car or motorcycle always revs their engine. Why? Nobody cares.
And for $25, the zoo will take not a roach, but an actual rat. They'll name a rat after your ex and feed it to a snake.
Eat it,
every other zoo in the world. Man, step your game up, because you're all looking up at the San Antonio Zoo. Tom Izzo, my guest. He'll call teammates out when he has to, like when he got on Gabe Brown for not boxing out during the Michigan game.
Boy, I tell you what, it's what I love about you. You get in depth in everything you do, and to know that is pretty good.
Stand back to myself, a good asshole.
He's much better when he's, quote, a good a-hole. And if you're going to be a good a-hole, you may as well be a great a-hole.
Oh, a push.
Sorry, takers. Trust the bleeping process.
Trust the process?
Trust it.
Are you a $40 million quarterback?
You tell me.
Are you?
I'm
you translate
you.
That for you. Hell yes, I'm a $40 million quarterback. I'm sure as hell not going to sit here and say that I'm not a $40 million quarterback.
Do you have the recording?
Yes.
You have the tape?
I don't have the tape.
You're a liar. Yeah, 20 minutes earlier, you said you had the tape. You're drunk on pizza and garlic butter. Clear your head, clear your skin, and stop saying my man Mark Shapiro should be in jail.
You know, pizza's actually very nutritious. Very
stop
healthy.
Saying that, too. Mike Krzyzewski joining us. Kobe, of course, was one of your players.
I hardly ever bring him up to my upstairs office. It's like a museum. And I brought out pictures. I said, you know, I lost one of my players. And you guys are my players.
We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
That's incredible. Oh, we'll leave it at that. Oh, okay, Jim. If you say so, all this time to come up with something, ownership, accountability, to get ready for a presser, and that's what you come up with. I think I'll leave it at that.
When I showed him who's our goodest friend is, Jim, I made a life-size paper mache version of you, Jim.
16 clubs, 7 different brands, stupid putter, a shrink-wrapped 8, the wrong head cover for his 20-year-old $7 driver, 4 irons, and a ladies' club. You cannot be sitting in a Florida parking lot with your sweats around your ankles and say, oh, my bad, and act like we're all just going to move on with our lives. You should have been at the team facility working on your game and not in some random parking lot rubbing it out. What the hell is the matter with you anyway, Reese?
Penis man.
Pancake Friday!
Lobster enchilada.
Jim Crane. Total horse's ass. Anyway.
Adam Carolla is my guest.
I just feel like I'm working every weekend. I'm like in contact with everybody all the time. I need to go just jump in a frozen lake.
She does not like Tiger Woods one bit.
But you're going to take her on Valentine's Day weekend to RIV.
Absolutely, because I need to go to RIV.
Did you get down? Did you bet the XFL?
Yes, on DC. I hit it. I won. Cardio.
Brian Dutcher.
Thanks for having me back, Jim. I'm great.
Good to have you back, Brian.
25-0 and living in San Diego. Life's good.
Eventually.
Outro.
Who are you?
Tahimu Salami.
That's horse mess.
Huge shout out to Parasite.
Jim, you know, I got to take this massive dump.
There
you
go.
To get off the phone.
Therese McGuire wanted to show you his balls.
He said balls.
You know, I got
1,000.
We'll leave it at that.
It's always not just a pleasure. It's an honor to be on the best show.
Good night now.
Did you hear that? Brian Dutcher is my guest. Brian, great to have you on. How are you?
Thanks for having me back, Jim. I'm great.
Good to have you back, Brian. 25-0
and living in San Diego. Life's good.
My man, you are living in San Diego and you are undefeated, so life is great. Tuesday night, you beat New Mexico 82-59 to win the Mountain West, as I mentioned. Brian, it seems to me, it feels completely surreal to me where I'm sitting for you to clinch a regular season title in the middle of February. Does it feel kind of surreal to you, or does it feel pretty normal?
Surreal, because the hardest thing to do is win a regular season conference title. You know, anyone can get hot at conference tournament time, and we've done that. But to endure over the last couple of months and to clinch the title with 4 to go is a great feeling.
All right, so how much did it mean to you to not only clinch, but to clinch it at home?
It's great. We have the best environment on the West Coast. Us, Arizona and Gonzaga, have great environments, and the building's been full. It's been electric. And the game before this, we retired Kawhi's jersey, put it up in the rafters, and had a full house for that. And so it's just been a real celebration on the campus.
So, Brent, for those who missed that, what was that moment like to put that number up in the rafters, given what he's been to the program?
He's been incredible, and it was great having there, along with the whole Clipper team. Doc Rivers, Ballmer was there, and we had the whole crew there to celebrate Kawhi's jersey raising, and then to beat a very good Utah State, to come from behind at halftime and win the game. It was just a great night on campus.
They are a good team, Utah State. Brian Dutcher joining us. You know, it seemed like it would be pretty easy. Going back to New Mexico, it seems like it was pretty easy. If you didn't see the game, you win at 82-59. But the fact is, you were up two on them at halftime. And as Matt Mitchell said, quote, "We definitely went into the locker room and as a team told each other we needed to pick it up and be better," end quote. Then you go out and you outscore New Mexico 47-26 in the second half. How pleased were you with the way the guys stepped up on both ends after halftime?
Really happy with our performance, Jim. And obviously, it's always easier at home. You know, we'll see how we respond again if we get down on the road. And we have a couple hard road games left, obviously. But I like the way we responded at home. We play the game the right way. We share the ball. We defend at a high level. And the kids really care about each other. And I say there's metrics for offense, there's metrics for defense, but there's no metric for chemistry, and that might be our greatest strength.
I really like that. There's no metrics for chemistry. So how do you go about measuring it if there is no metrics for it, and how do you build it and develop it?
You know, coaches always are famous for doing team building, and we're no different. But you can't build something that's not there. If kids don't like each other, if there's friction, you can try to make it better, but you can never mend it completely. This team genuinely likes each other. They all love basketball. They're gym rats. And they've all sacrificed part of their games for the good of the team. And that's what's made us special this year.
Brian Dutcher joining us. You know what's interesting to me is you can't, I know you don't want to take all the credit for the chemistry, but at the same time, this roster did not just come about accidentally. The story goes that you had noticed a pattern where the team would get off to a tough start early in the season, but be really good late, so you decide to set about making the team older by connecting with veteran transfers. How did you go about developing that plan?
Well, we had five freshmen and three sophomores in the lineup the year before, and we played good basketball late and lost in the conference championship. But as a non-Power 5 school, you have to have an early resume or you have no chance unless you win the conference tournament. And so we got older. We stayed older. I had a 2 fifth-year seniors. I had a fourth-year junior, Malachi Flynn, sitting. And I just thought being older gave us the best chance to win early games, which we did, and then the winning continued into the conference.
Okay, so older is older, but older is not necessarily better, not per se. So how do you go about evaluating potential transfers and identifying the guys who might be good fits for what you're looking to do?
I think K.J. Fagan's a perfect example. He was a 18-point-a-game scorer at Santa Clara, and we brought him in, and we knew Malachi was going to be a great scorer. But K.J. said, "Coach, I've always wanted to be more of a point guard. I don't want to have the burden of having to score every time I touch the ball." And so just that comment registered in to me that he wanted to win more than he wanted to score. And so you have to peel the onion, as Coach Fisher used to say. You have to find out what's inside and what they're about. It just can't be talent. It has to be a willingness to sacrifice to win.
Brian Dutcher joining us. You mentioned Malachi a couple of times. I'm going to go back to that. But to what you just said, obviously you want talent. You need talent. But how much of this is about finding guys with grit and toughness who just love basketball, who will put in the work?
It's what they do away from you, Jim, that makes you great. You know, when we get them on the floor for an hour and 15 minutes, you know, we can put them in situations to be good, but they have to make the plays. It's always players that make plays. Coaches put them in situations, and they determine how good you're going to be by their willingness to make the right play. And this team has worked hard away from us. They're in the gym all the time. They love basketball. And when I get them on the floor, they're willing to sacrifice part of their game for the good of the team.
And Brian, you're the second coach to say that this week, that you only get guys for an hour or two, maybe in the pros, 2 to 3 hours a day. So it's the other 22 hours away that determine the quality of the 2 to 3 hours where you have them. So that's, you're the second person in like 3 days to say that on the program. And then if you go back to Malachi, you and I talked about him earlier this season. He had 15 on Tuesday. He's on the Naismith Trophy midseason team. When he first arrived, did you know how special he might be?
Yeah, we knew he was very good. Obviously, we played him when he was at Washington State, and he put 25 on us. So we knew firsthand how good he was. And I never valued his playmaking ability. When we went to recruit him, I knew he could score, and then I watched tape on him. I was going to show him what a great playmaker I was going to make him, and then I watched the tape. I already saw he was a playmaker. And so that's the best thing about Malachi. He doesn't have to score to impact the game. You'll look up, and he'll be 3-1 assisted turnovers. He'll have 6 rebounds. He'll have 2 steals. And then when it's time to score, to turn it up, he'll turn his game up. So he's not out there hunting shots. He's out there hunting wins.
San Diego State is the last undefeated team in the country. They're at Boise State on Sunday. That game is right here on CBS Sports Network, 4 p.m. Eastern. Brian Detra, my guest. So, Brian, you've got a chance to make more history in a number of ways, including finishing off an undefeated regular season. Is it something that you talk about and embrace, or is that like talking during a no-hitter and you do not want to jinx it so you don't do it?
You know, Jim, I've tried to set many goals. I think goals are important. And so we had five games in 10 or 11 days. I said, let's win all five of those. And then we had five games the whole month of December. I said, the goal is to win five games in December. And then when we won 20 in a row, 21 in a row, I told the team, 21 in a row doesn't hang a banner. We have to hang a banner to validate it. And so we hung the banner with four to go. And so now the saying is, let's get greedy. Let's go for four more. Let's go for perfection. Now, it's easy to say, and it's going to be hard to do. But now the goal is just the next four games is our goal. Let's find a way to win the first one and get greedy and win four more.
And Brian, before I let you go, let me go back to Matt Mitchell for a minute, because in the second half of that game against New Mexico, he scored his 1,000th career point. That's obviously a big milestone. What did that moment mean to you, and what's it say about what he's meant to the program?
I think it changes the direction of the conversation. We talk about transfers, transfers, transfers. Here's Matt Mitchell, a guy who's been in the program 3 years, that's gotten better every year, that's developed here, that's put his work in, and to see him reach 1,000 points was fantastic. And also see him hang his second banner here at San Diego State is even better. So Matt's a program guy, much like Jordan Shackle, guys that have been here for their careers and have benefited greatly as individual players, but also as winners.
So one last thing. I like this story a lot. For instance, I had Bob Myers on the show yesterday. He was talking about how one of the things he's learned from this season is the importance of what he called sweeping the corners, you know, taking care of all the little things that might be overlooked when you're having success. Seth Davis had a story about how you were watching your guys stretch before practice, and guys were not in rhythm with it. Some were cutting corners. What was your reaction when you saw that?
I just tell them, they don't pay me to watch the big things. They pay me to watch all the little things, because the little things determine if you're going to be good or not. Most people think it's all the grandiose, hey, what offense are you running, this and that. It's as small as, are you paying attention to detail to everything? And it's the little things that make the difference in your season.
Interesting. San Diego State won the Mountain West regular season title already this year. They are number four in both polls. And once again, they're at Boise State on Sunday on CBS Sports Network. Brian, great to have you back. Thank you so much. And looking forward to seeing how the rest of the year goes.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
One of the phones. Let's go to Medford. Trapper in Medford. What's up, brother? How you doing?
I'm doing great, Jimmy. How about you?
You sound good, man. You sound good.
Feeling good.
Good.
You know, I just had to follow up on your evisceration of Jim Crane yesterday about the cheating scandal. And what he's saying, in our opinion, the stealing of the signs didn't impact the game. We're going to leave it at that? No, Jim, we're not going to leave it at that. You lying, revisionist, mendacious sack of manure. There's too many of us that love the game. There's too many of us that weren't born yesterday. And there's even a lot of us that are Dodger haters, Jim, that are going to stand up and call you scumbags out for what you did to them and the game itself in 2017. And tell you, just to take a look at some of the stats, the Dodgers were 98-0 in games they took into the eighth. You had to go back to 2016 to find a home run hit off their ace, Kenley Jansen. But somehow in the ninth, in game two, Jansen throws his signature best pitch, his slider, only to see matinee idol Marwin Gonzalez tattoo it into Blue Heaven bleachers. And then in the 11th of that game, triple threat Cameron Maybin picked up from the Angels, batting .235, hits a frozen rope single. And then Springer, who was 0-for-4 in game one, destroys a Brandon McCarthy fastball to win the game. You put all that together in six other games, and with all the midnight confessions, the candy ass, Altuve and Bregman like mea culpas, the acts of contrition nobody, including a Houston parish priest, would accept. You put all that together, Jim, along with every kid that believed in you utter degenerates who had the ability to look those kids in the face at FanFest as if you represented something decent, something clean, something wholesome and American about, you make me want to vomit. You want absolution, Mr. Crane? Give back the rings. You want forgiveness? Give back the trophy and the bonus bread. and to Commissioner Manfred, let's get everybody here, and to Manfred, at the least, suspend the offenders a minimum of 1 year, which would be a bargain given what your ilk has done to the Roids offenders and Pete Rose. Try and show you're not a total whore for the owners. One last thing, Jim. You hear a lot about the 1919 Black Sox, about how they got thrown out of baseball for cheating. Yeah, it was to lose the series. The 2017 Astros, they cheated to win it and then cover it up. And you're helping do that, Mr. Crane. And frankly, it makes me sick when I heard what Jimmy put up on the jungle yesterday. But yeah, the 2018.
Chopper, I got to jump in. You know what that music means. That said, rack him.
30 pieces of silver.
Good night now!